This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good evening, you are listening to Skip Intro. I'm Lee Chui Lin, and in the studio with me today, Julian Yap, as well as Ian McNally, and we are talking about this film.
Patricia, I'm very sorry about your loss. I can't even imagine how you must feel.
Your children are safe now. But have they heard her crying? Have they felt the sting of her tears? They will. And she will come for them.
Who?
La Llorona.
Okay, so you just heard the trailer for The Curse of the Weeping Woman, one in a series of very forebodingly named films. What did you guys make of it?
Well, I had high hopes because I was kind of expecting it to be more connected to the Conjuring movies. And The Nun was the last one we saw, which admittedly got ludicrous, but got ludicrous in a fun roller coastery way. And this one, after a kind of intriguing start, it really went off the rails for me in a bad way.
Yeah, I think I definitely feel the same way. It's very tied in Mexican folklore. There's a base for a lot of cool things that could happen. But as a non-horror fan, as a horror fan, I don't see how this, you know, pulls anyone into the story as much as the previous films in this universe does.
Okay, so what is the story? There is, I presume, a weeping woman of some kind. She curses folks. I don't know. I mean, yeah. I'm just going off the title.
There's a prologue set in Mexico in I forget the year. And after that, we skip to LA in the 1970s because all the Conjuring movies are period pieces. I keep forgetting this because they could happen now, but the fact that the Warrens were in the 70s just means that everyone wears flares. Linda Cardellini wears flares throughout this movie.
She does. And Linda Cardellini prospers in the 70s for some reason. Yeah. You know, Mad Men, Freaks and Geeks. She just does that era really
Scooby-Doo
well.
Feels 70s yeah. Because of Shaggy's flares. But it opens really strongly. There's this long shot of like a family getting ready to go out for their school day or whatever. And it's like a single take through the house. I think it's a single take.
I actually had a lot of doubts about this film just from the trailer. But when that opening shot, that tracking shot throughout the entire house, I thought, well, okay, this could be maybe a good film.
And there's even a little bit of Sam Raimi, Edgar Wright crash zooms, and she's just grabbing a coffee and stuff like that, which I thought was quite cute. So then there's like a fake out with regards to, you know, her kids missed the bus. Then you see like a child services typewriter, and it turns out she works in child services. And while trying to help this other woman, who is the actress who played Anuksu Amun in the Mummy movies, and she was freaking me out throughout the movie, even though she's not the monster, because I was like, who is this woman? She inadvertently gets on the path of the weeping woman, the La Llorona, this Mexican folklore ghost, essentially, who drowned her children in a fit of jealousy and seeks to replace them with kids of other people. Now, the Conjuring universe itself has just gone weird. There's the movies with the Warrens with Patrick Wilson and Vera Farmiga, which are kind of interesting because they're based on case files. Then there's the Annabelle movies, which I don't know why they keep making those. This has a very tenuous link to the first Annabelle movie.
Tenuous with a capital T. It's so tenuous.
There's a character who turns up for 5 minutes.
You could miss it if
you fell asleep. Yeah, there's literally, like, Father Perez is in this and he's also in Annabelle, and that's it. So, and like, there's a point where he's like, oh, you need help from the church. And you think, oh, the Warrens are going to pop up. I didn't expect that. And it's like, oh, no, I haven't got time to wait for those. I'll go for this other guy.
Yeah. But I also, I mean, knowing that it's Mexican folklore, do you want the Warrens showing up? Should they not turn to more traditional ways of dealing with this sort of supernatural stuff?
Yeah, this curandero, essentially, who's basically Mexican Father Merrin, but like excommunicated from the church and doing his own guerrilla style exorcism stuff. And the movie takes a long time to get to him. Like, there's an awful lot of the kids not telling the mom that there's this lady in white haunting them and burning them with her hands. Like, there's like, what's wrong? What's wrong, Chris? And it's like, they just say silent. I understand this trauma, but like in a horror movie, when everyone has seen the thing, it's super annoying for them all to not tell each other they've seen the thing so they can get a plan together and kind of do something about it, as opposed to just be terrified of windows and drapes, which a lot of this movie ends up doing.
The weeping woman, she's got this white dress and she has that billowing terrifying walking thing going on with the dress. But so because of that, they rely so much on this billowing thing with all the windows and all of the drapes in this house, and it gets old so quick.
I think one of the reasons why it's set in the 70s is because there's no air conditioning, so they can keep all the windows open for like fake outs.
So yeah, here's the thing. I don't understand anything that you said. Like, I feel as if I don't know what's in this for maybe not just for me, right? Mm. I just don't understand what's in this. Like, so many of the things that you've talked about are things that I have seen in other films. Like, literally, just throw a stone and you're going to hit another movie that's done a woman haunting a bunch of kids. Yeah. You know, B, a family being haunted by something in the house. C, just like, there's so many tropes that you're talking about that you can easily fit into any other horror movie. So I'm not sure what
does this add?
What does this add? Why was it made? Who gave them the money? Why is this happening? Like, I just have so many questions.
After we watched this, I turned to Ian and I said, I think I've seen this film before. I've not watched a lot of horror films, but I'm pretty sure I've seen this before. It is formulaic. It is, oh no, this happens and this happens. Oh no, it's not new.
But then it doesn't follow the formula as well. No. There's a whole idea of like this ghost, you know, her power is boundless, but if I use this special thing, I can keep her out of the house. But that's just the front door. Like, her power is boundless except when it comes to bathroom doors.
It's really a lot of lazy writing, I think. There's a lot of things that they just kind of explain away with a throwaway line, or even then a throwaway thing that the curandero might do. It's not well fleshed out. And when they try to flesh it out, it really feels like the editing was really weird. Like, some scenes have been taken out, some lines were taken out. It was just it's all over the place.
So does it at least scare you effectively, right? Because people sometimes go to horror movies, not necessarily for the great writing, not necessarily even for the great acting or anything else. People just go sometimes to be scared. Is this scary?
And this is why I wanted to bring Julie and Orba here, you know, the two biggest horror movie fans on staff with me, because I'm slightly worried that I'm getting a little bit jaded by all these horror movies and that, like, it takes something exquisite to keep me happy as opposed to just, like, giving me a scare. I did turn to you at the end of this and said, were you scared at all?
I was trying to think about how much time had passed because I wasn't scared. I wasn't,
because it felt like forever.
It felt like forever. I didn't want to leave because I was scared. I wanted to leave because I was really bored.
There's only one moment that even got close to getting me, and that's just because of Linda Cardellini, because I've liked her since Eeyore. And there's a moment where she sees down a hallway they show the white woman way too quickly, and Oliver. Like, at some point you see her face and she literally looks like Pennywise's makeup from the more recent version of It.
It's
just like a white
masky face
with lines.
Yep.
And she is just standing there reaching her hand out. It's not like the editing is a bit off. But when Linda Cardellini screams, that kind of like, oh my God, my child is in danger. I totally bought that one moment. That was great. But it kind of wore out by the 16th, 17th, or 18th time.
This sounds like a movie that I would just really struggle with simply because those things would scare me. I am enough of a wuss, you know, for those things to be frightening to me. But I would hate myself and I would hate the movie for doing it to me because it doesn't sound like it's worth even the scares. Like, it doesn't earn it.
No, definitely not. I am a scaredy cat. And I have, you know, that horror thing where, oh no, it'll come get me. It's right next to me. But no, they don't sustain that at all. It wasn't, you know, worth it. It wasn't, should I be maybe turning my lights on tonight when I go to bed? But it's not worth it.
All right. We have just heard them review The Curse of the Weeping Woman, them here being, of course, Ian and Julian. Up next, we talk about the rest of the Conjuring universe, such as it is, and also explore this new trend, or is it a new trend, of trying to just fit every movie into some sort of pre-existing world. You can tell us what you think. Specifically, actually, we want to know, do you like horror films? Because we realized that this week has been a pretty horror-heavy week, and we just wanted to know how many of you are actually interested in being scared. Let us know. You can WhatsApp 018-789-8899. You can tweet us at SkipIntroMY. And we'll be back to continue this discussion after this. It's BFM 89.9.
Bombing frustrated minds. BFM 89.9.
Hello, you are listening to Skip Intro with Lynn, Julian and Ian. We were speaking a little bit earlier about the latest in James Wan's The Conjuring series, The Curse of the Weeping Woman. And now we're going to turn our eye to, I guess, the rest of the series. I mean, it's quite long running at this point. I mean, there are quite a few films in it.
This is the sixth. I was just blown away. I actually can't distinguish how many Annabelle movies I've seen, because I think I've seen them all, and literally a week afterwards you don't remember much apart from the doll, and I think there's one moment in the first movie that kind of stuck out, because they actually just went from here's a creepy doll to here's a literal 7 foot tall demon standing in front of you. That was quite an arresting image to see in that. But yeah, I like the idea of a director having this, you know, James Wan has the cachet now, especially after Aquaman, and, you know, himself and Lee Whannell created the Saw series, also went to 7 or 8 movies, I believe. And they started again with The Conjuring. The Conjuring movies, I think, they're getting to be like Star Trek movies, where Star Trek movies, it's every even one is supposed to be the good one. With these, it's basically everyone without Patrick Wilson's not a good one.
Mm.
I mean, it's really when you see him turn up, you go, wait, is this Insidious? And then after that, you say, oh, hang on, it's The Conjuring. Do you even know the difference between those two movies?
I think I've seen maybe, all in all, I've seen probably one total of all these films. But when I say that, I mean I've watched about 20 minutes of each.
Mm.
You know, something like that. Just things that come on, you catch it, and you're like, oh, this is the doll one. Okay.
Yeah.
And then another one, it's like, oh, this is the boyhood demon haunting thingy. Okay, sure. Yeah. And then you just kind of move on. Oh, this one has the old lady. And it's all very sort of similar in style. It also looks very similar visually. Yeah. They're off a type.
I think the house, so, because of LA, the house in Weeping Woman looks a lot like the house from Annabelle, one of the Annabelles, and also maybe it's the same house from Insidious. They're just these kind of, you know, suburban large porch houses that you get in the US.
Sort of the ones that they feature in American Horror Story. And
yeah.
That's just how they are.
Crucially, you don't have neighbors. I think that's kind of the main thing. It's like, crucially, your neighbor is beyond the forest through which there are wolves. You know, that seems to be the main thing. I admittedly, and I say this, I really am, I'm going to be the bahe of this episode and say I generally really do not like horror films. So these are not for me. I recognize that. But I don't know. And I guess it just feels a bit cynical, I suppose, because at this point they're making them because they make money. It feels like.
Yeah, and even going into this, I wasn't 100% sure it was a Conjuring movie or not. The first of all, they changed the name. I think it was The Curse of La Llorona in other markets, but they didn't know we'd understand that or not. And it seemed to be on and off whether it was a Conjuring movie. There's another Conjuring movie coming called The Crooked Man, which is just going to be based on some English folklore story. And it's not going to have the Warrens in it at all.
It sounds like Mad Libs. The Weeping Woman.
Yeah.
The Crooked Man. Just adjective plus person
the
equals
the Wet Dog.
Movie. Yeah, it's like at this point, who knows?
Yeah.
It's, yeah.
There is another Warrens movie coming in 2020. And I think the second Conjuring movie, which is the one in England, which is the kind of based on the real Poltergeist story, like that was my first entry to the series. And that genuinely, again, as someone who's grown up watching horror and is slightly inured to it, that did get me a few times, and I've been enjoying those ones. It's just the other ones are like, it feels like someone wants to try out a horror movie. Let's do it within the safety net of the Conjuring franchise, and if it fails, it doesn't matter.
So earlier you guys made reference to the fact that they didn't really need to make this part of a series. Like they're, it's tenuous at best, the connections. Is there any storytelling value to having it be that way? Or is it really just like, this is a reliable franchise, let's just park it here, let's just give it all the little signature ticks that people associate with the series and then let it out into the world?
I think maybe it's this one in particular that feels that they're doing it for the bank. You know, they're just churning them out because they know that people are going to be watching them. I think there are some series that can do it. There are some series that can't do it. This is one of them. And it doesn't feel like it's paying off. I don't see anyone actually enjoying it because they want to catch little things that might tie it all together, and we're waiting for that big reveal. It's not there yet.
Mm. I mean, the link with the first Annabelle was tenuous as best, because it's like, I think there's a small scene in the first movie where it's like, hey, look at this doll, it's haunted, don't touch it. And then they made a whole movie off that. With this, it's basically the number of horror movies we don't review on this show, because it seems to be, everyone seems to think that they're cheap to make, they're easy to crank out, and studio, you know, there's always a chance, like, you're going to be, something's going to be the next Blumhouse pick that's going to blow up. And there are so many movies we don't even bring before the BFM committee to choose to talk about, because there's literally every single week, there's like, and that's again across different regions as well. We get like, you get Tamil horror, you get local horror, you get Chinese horror. There's just, even there's a movie at the moment, I haven't had time to watch it. It's like when When Ghost Meets Zombie or something like that.
Sure.
So that's like a comedy version of that. There's just so much horror out there. So slapping the Conjuring name on a director's chance at kind of making it big seems to be purely a marketing decision.
But in a broader sense, I think we have seen Hollywood starting to move into this everything must be in a universe thing because then people want to buy the merchandise. Yeah. I mean, that seems to be the thinking of it. Every single moment is built on, I mean, there are so many movies where it ends with a clear lineup to a sequel. Mm. And there's nothing more frustrating sometimes than having watched a movie that you're like, yes, okay, now land the plane. And then they land it and go, yeah, but what's next? Wink. And you're like, I don't really need that all the time. Yeah.
I kind of miss the time when studios would put out a film, wait until, you know, maybe audiences like it enough that it makes a lot of bank. And then they sign deals and they sign them for 3 more and they want to extend it. Now, we're getting deals that we've signed on the next 10 years of your life, and that's what we're going to be getting. And it makes lazy films in the middle.
Those halcyon days before Iron Man 1.
Yep.
Yeah. Literally, yeah. But it also comes down to, and the thing about comic books, right, is that in certain ways, the character arcs are pretty set. I mean, it's just a question of choosing which one you're going to pursue or which one you're going to mix and match and kind of mash up in order to create a new story. But with a lot of these other world-creating movies, I think there is no actual proof yet that audiences are interested in the character's stories or in extending that character growth, right? So sometimes you're just building and building and building, but then you end up with like a Franken movie, and it's just an odd choice.
I have to say that I understand we have things like fan fiction. Audiences want to have the universe expanded so much that they do it themselves. And if a studio is going to do that for them, that's cool. But, you know, don't do it halfway. Give audiences what they need, what they're looking for.
I'm hoping that they'll learn the lessons of the Universal Dark Universe. I mean, Universal are trying it again now with Fast and the Furious turning what is an... I can't remember. Again, there's too many of these movies. They're turning a 9-movie franchise into a spin-off with Hobbs and Shaw. You know, they're trying to rehabilitate a character who kills one of many fans' favorite character from the previous movies. And that movie looks weird. And I don't know what's going on with the soundtrack to that trailer. But Universal really, you know, really messed up when they did the Dark Universe. I mean, they failed the first time with Luke Evans when they did Dracula Untold, which just had Charles Dance at the end of it for a bit saying, like, you know, basically doing a Nick Fury. You're in part of a bigger world now. There's more than vampires out there. And, I mean, it's going to become like Hollywood hubris, the photo of Tom Cruise, Johnny Depp, and... Gladiator, what's his name? Russell Crowe, where they're all standing around like, wow, we're launching the Dark Universe. And then like a week later, we're canceling the Dark Universe.
I see that photo just pop up maybe every 6 months. And I get so glad that universe just tanked.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
It's the same with, at one point, there was a writer's room of like 15 writers pulling together ideas for Transformers movies. And they were going to have all sorts of crazy ideas. And thankfully, the last night or whatever it was, again, I've seen too many of these awful movies, crashed and burned. And the director of Kubo, even though the director of Kubo and the Two Strings directed a Transformers movie, that's a sentence that should just spark joy in me. I still haven't been able to sit down and watch Bumblebee because of the trauma of those other movies.
Yeah, and that's what a Transformers movie needs, right? More writers. Yeah. That was the problem before. Let us know what you think. Do you like universes? Do you like movies that are set in continuous universes, all building one on top of the other? Or do you miss the days of the standalone movie? Again, that number to WhatsApp, 018-789-8899. Get in touch with us at SkipIntroMY on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. Download the rest of our podcast, bfm.my/skipintro. And we will be back here again tomorrow. See you then. BFM 89.9.